Are you a school leader striding for excellence? Do you crave actionable strategies and fresh perspectives to navigate the challenges of education today? Get ready to take charge. This is Control Shift Lead, giving you something to control, something to shift your thinking, and something concrete to help you lead your school. With Jim Wichman of Inspired Edification and Adam Bush of AWB Education. Now on the Forward Ed Network, where they are advancing voices and shaping education. Your journey to empowered leadership starts now.
Welcome to Control Shift Lead. I'm Jim Wichman from Inspired Edification. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend Adam Bush from AWB Education.
How you doing, Jim?
Pretty good. I'm really excited. I hear that music and I just like goosebumps. I'm like so excited, especially with the sun that's rolling through the windows right now.
Yeah.
Crazy excited for that. That isn't even talking about
it. Yeah, it's just crazy.
It was our guest coming in too. So we'll get to him in a second here, but let's just really take a moment. It's this time of year where, you know, the sun is shining a little bit more, which is wonderful. The temperature is warming up a little bit.
Yeah.
As a former middle school principal, the spring odor is in the air.
Yeah, that's true.
The building
that's
there.
Very true.
You remember that? And
my allergies are flaring up, and I think we see a bunch of sniffling and sneezing going around. You can't tell if it's a leftover cold or if it's just the allergies hitting. But yeah, no, it is. It's a fun time. It's a great time.
Yeah, I know that in our schools, the end of the year energy is really starting to pick up, whether it be dealing with a testing season. Or just that spring fever is always, you know, in the hallways. And like I mentioned, just not only does it feel different, smells different, in good and maybe not so good ways.
You bet.
But everybody's getting excited about this. And I think that it's also a great time to be celebrating what's been accomplished throughout the years.
Yeah.
Hey, thoroughly. Adam, I'm just so excited about that. So how was March for you? Good, bad, different?
Yeah, it was good. You know, a lot of basketball, get a little family time. I think everybody else around me takes off for a spring break trip when that time comes. I get a break from everybody when that time comes because that's when I get all of my work done that I've been putting off. So, yeah, no, that's super. I love that time of year because I really do. It's very satisfying for me to start checking stuff off my list.
Feels good.
And I can just hammer that out.
Yes. How's your body holding up from basketball season this year?
I'm glad it's done. I will say that much. By the time we got to the end of that, when you get into postseason play and it's a game every single night, I think one week we went 5 of 6 nights. And I'm old. Back in the day when I was young, I could pull that off going up and down the floor. But those kids out there are a whole lot faster and a lot better shape than I'll ever be in again, I think. But no, I survived
bigger.
It was fun, though. It was good.
They look bigger these days. Are they bigger now than when you
they
started refereeing?
Or I'm smaller. One of the two.
Well, I'll
and
take
both
smaller,
is probably
too.
Possible. Let's be honest. How about
hey, Adam,
you? What have you been up to?
Well, you know, a lot of traveling, and the good news is I got to end March with 2 full weeks working from home, just lightly working at home, and got a chance to reconnect a little bit locally here with things. Going to regroup. Mm-hmm. I'm going to slide back out here in April. It's going to be the busiest month, but looking forward to May because in May I don't have to. The only time I'm leaving town. Is when most of my family and I are going to be headed to Portugal. We've never traveled like this as a family. And
well,
I don't
fun.
Think any of us, except for my wife, have left the country. So, I mean, Europe side, we've been to the Cancuns, maybe, you know, but just like something
cool.
Really different.
Yeah. That'll be fun. So, that'll be hey, fun. Test how strong that family is. That's for sure. In a trip like that.
Well, we're always entertainment for people. Let's be very clear on that one.
That's true.
Hey, we got a powerhouse guest. I mean, we thought we've always had great guests, but this is going to be hitting a little differently. And I know that he's going to capture this video and he's going to throw it right back at his friend, Matt Townsley. But we have someone that's really special here today. I'm really excited with Dr. Chad Lang is a district leader and an education consultant. And somewhere in there, he writes books. Amazing how that works out. You might also recognize his work from his work collaborating with Dr. Matt Townsley, on the SRG podcast, the mini series, which you can find that on the Commons, which, you know, you stick with us. You have any questions about how to get a hold of that. We're going to help you out, listeners. That's for sure.
You bet.
I got to tell you how that podcast starts out every time. I just jump in like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Tell me more. Let's go.
Yeah.
You got two good friends who have a common link to knowledge when it comes to how do we educate our people and giving feedback to our students and their parents along the way about really, it's about learning.
Real powerful stuff.
It is.
Yeah.
Chad, thank you for joining us today. What do we tell us a little bit about the Dr. Chad Lang. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, first of all, it's just amazing to get to join you guys. I love your work. I've been just kind of a fan from afar, and I've gotten an opportunity to interface with both of you in different ways over the last couple of months and years. And so it's been really fun. And to follow up episodes after Dr. Matt Townsley, I don't know how you bring that kind of energy. There's another podcast. There's a grading podcast out there. I won't name the one, but they call him the sportscaster of grading. So it just kind of cracks me. Yeah. But they're not wrong. So definitely Matt could represent himself very well in the sports center of grading and assessment. There's no doubt. So I'm just humbled and honored to be a part of it. I love the work. I'm passionate about the work that we do in school leadership and public education, all education, really. It's just a great equalizer. I believe in the work now more than ever. I'm a product of Iowa schools and great public educators. And I just love the opportunity to every single day continue to pour into people that get to have that sort of cascading effect on kids. It's an awesome privilege. It's one I don't take for granted. So anything I can do to help connect and share, I always want to do that. It's a wonderful opportunity utilizing technology and other methods like this, just to continue to collaborate and find ways when, you know, I know a lot of school leaders, if they were like me, they were on their way to supervise a track meet, a ball game, a tennis match, something, and, you know, throwing on an opportunity to learn, and you can just kind of double down. And this is a great opportunity to do that. So thanks for having me, you guys.
Well, you might have called Dr. Townsley the sportscaster of grading or something. Okay, so are you the umpire of grading then? Because I don't know, Jim, I don't know if you saw his latest article that he put out, but it was about tightening the strike zone and how.
Yeah,
that was a heck of an article right there. So maybe you're the umpire of grading. That's what we're going to name you.
Yeah, I think I like to see the parallels between the work we do in school leadership and just a lot of everyday life. You know, if you get into grading and assessment reform at all, you're going to find out that one of the big elephants in the room you always have to try to figure out how to wrestle with is this idea of the real world. You know, the real world doesn't do these things. And so I'm always on the lookout all the time. I'm like, actually, it's quite the contrary. You know, almost everything operates with this idea of competency is king, and especially in a 21st century American economy in a globalized world, like people want to pay someone to do things that they actually know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a lot of that. So I'm always looking for parallels. I thought, you know, this information about how major league umpires have gotten better over time, like that's exactly how a great grading and assessment setup would be in the classrooms.
What I also like about that analogy is you're not saying we're going to change. We're just evolving.
Yeah.
The umpires evolved into that. They didn't just change everything.
Yeah. And it came from training and professional development. It came from opportunities to use technology to review and get better and get feedback.
Yep.
I mean, that's part of, you know, professional growth. So aim small, miss small, I think is a great takeaway from that. And if you're thinking about we're curating professional evidence about what students can know or do every day, we should be trying to aim small and miss small in terms of what we're communicating to.
I'm telling you, I get like really fired up on this. I'm trying to stay close because this wasn't even the podcast there.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're not even a segment one yet. He's just dropping nuggets.
I know. Well, as you're thinking about, think about all these times, everything you're talking about is making it about the objective or the student or the learning or the baseball. They're not making it about themselves. And sometimes we make it about ourselves because it's safer that way.
Yeah, that's true.
And so forth. But I have to know this before I kind of end this little segment here. And that is, what high school? I mean, that's one of the ways I connect is what high school you go to? Where'd you graduate from?
I graduated from Lamar's Community High School in Northwest Iowa, right outside of Sioux City, ice cream capital of the world.
Ice cream capital of the world. Yes, little blue bunny up there.
Indeed. Yeah.
Yes.
And so it was an awesome experience. I loved every minute of it. I thought it was a great experience. And I absolutely 100% wouldn't be sitting in the chair that I get to every day or standing in whatever environment I'm in every day to be able to turn around and give back to people, if people can pour into me as educators. And so
I love that.
Great shout out to all the educators, some who are still actually there. So pretty impressive. And shout out to Lamar's.
I travel through that community quite often on my way to that little lake just north of there.
There you go.
Hey, so everyone, we got to get into this hospitality mindset here.
Yeah.
But first, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Stick around. When we return, we're going to give you something you can control, a way to shift your thinking, and a strategy you can use to lead your school. We'll be right back.
You're doing incredible work in your classroom and community. Isn't it time the world heard about it? Welcome to The Commons, a dedicated podcast channel on the Forward Ed Network, built specifically for educational professionals like you. We provide the platform at no cost. You bring the ideas and the passion. We provide the reach to share them with the field. Ready to start your broadcast? Ready to share your knowledge with others? Email us at admin@forwardednetwork.com and join the conversation today.
If you're an educator trying to stay sharp without adding more to your plate, SkillSpring is built for you. Short, practical professional learning designed around real classroom needs. Lesson strategies, instructional tools, and ideas you can actually use tomorrow. No overwhelm, no wasted time. Just learning that fits your day. SkillSpring. Learn forward.
There's a moment every educator knows, when the to-do list gets longer than the school day. That's where ClassBridge AI comes in. Turn ideas into lesson materials, activities, and classroom resources in minutes, so you can spend less time building and more time teaching. ClassBridge AI. Work smarter in the classroom.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Now, we always start things off with the things that we can actually grab a hold of. So in this control segment, we are going to talk about the hospitality mindset. So Dr. Lang, in a world of high-stakes testing and tight budgets, why is the way we welcome people into our space, or that hospitality mindset, the specific thing that we need to take control of first?
Well, can I tell you a little bit about the genesis of the idea first? I mean,
absolutely.
Hospitality doesn't usually like jump off the page for school leaders. It's like you usually hear about servant leadership, right? That Robert Greenleaf kind of popularized that servant leadership. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with servant leadership. I think it's great. But what I started to experience early on in my career, especially when I was a district activities director, I'm running everywhere. I felt like my opportunity to be successful is to just step in and make sure that I'm serving in the trenches right along with the officials and the concession folks and the booster club and the ticket taker. And I wanted to make sure I could run every score clock and all those kinds of things. And what I found is that people really thought that I was doing a good job. So I'm like, this is great. But what I also realized is that it just continued to be more. You were a victim of your own success. It's like, we don't really need to get anyone else trained on the scoreboard. Chad will always do it. And so what happened was, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And I really limited the growth of leadership of the folks around me, whose capacity was usually super high, by actually leaning into servant leadership and seeing how short-sighted that was in that particular role. And again, this was my first administrative role. I was surrounded by like tons of veteran coaches and teachers. I was so lucky. I think like almost every one of those coaches, head coaches I was working with in that school district, northeast of Kansas City, or in the Missouri Hall of Fame in their sport. It's unbelievable. And I bring that up not to brag, but actually say, it started to get me thinking, like, I'm not serving them by just servicing clerical things, like managerial things. And some of them were great with technology and some of them weren't. And all those types of things. But one of the things they had in common as coaches in their leadership style was not what they did for their players, their athletes, and their parents, but what they actually made them feel when they were part of the program.
Okay.
And so I really started to kind of dive into this. And coincidentally, it's like the same time that I'm getting my doctorate in leadership from the University of Missouri. It was not a superintendent program. It was educational leadership and policy analysis. And so I kind of signed up something that I didn't really know I was getting into. And I turned out to absolutely love it, because we worked through all kinds of different types of leadership that exist in education writ large, and even in nonprofits and so on. And servant leadership is a big part of it, right? And so I'm living it and I'm experiencing this, and I'm like, man. And somehow, some way, I wish I could tell you, but I don't know, I got turned onto this book called Setting the Table by Danny Meyer. Now, if you don't know who Danny Meyer is, he's the founder and the famous chef of the Shake Shack, right? He started the franchise, okay. Shake Shack, but he also has awesome, awesome restaurants. And Union Square Cafe is one I've been to in Manhattan and New York City. There are a number of others. He was really like one of his novelties around his restaurants. This was really around hospitality. He's one of the first restaurants that I know of, famously, that started with no tipping. Like, we're not going to have tipping. That's not a part of our experience. Because it affected the delivery of leadership,
sure,
that the employees provided to the customers. And so really early on, I started like leaning into those principles. And I'm like, how could I apply what he talks about in this book, which is really about, it's not what you do for people. It's how you make them feel when they're there. So yeah, obviously there's everything from how you greet folks when they come in the door to how you get to have folks in your organization see how you interact with individuals, from parents to students, custodians, cooks, everybody in your organization, and giving the opportunity to understand how can I make them feel more valued here. And sometimes that means by actually asking more, like increasing the rigor and the level of importance in what they do and what they feel to our organization. And here's the nugget, right? All of that translates to our true customers, which are our students. And so if we can empower our staff to feel, I feel valued here. I know why I'm important. We have a leader that's helped set the stage for that. They've modeled it. They've also poured into me so that I can do that too. When the adults get better, the kids get better. And I always feel like rising waters lifts all boats that way. And some of it's through pretty direct coaching, and some of it's just through modeling the behavior. So that's where that idea of hospitality leadership comes from, or that hospitality mindset. Shout out to Danny Meyer and his great work in the food industry. But that's how I've sort of thought over the years now, over a decade of really trying to infuse that model within my school leadership practices.
So you're talking, what I like about this is the feel more value. What I'm hearing this is, it's about, you work with the adults. I mean, I know it's all about students, don't get me wrong here, but sometimes it's okay to be about the adults in the building too,
mm-hmm.
is what I'm hearing you say. Because if we give our teachers the energy, we take care of our teachers, they're going to have this energy to pass along down to the students.
Yeah. But also you're going to have the energy. See, that's the other thing too. Like once I started moving on to, you know, outside of the district activities director role, more into like assistant middle school principal or even district leadership, I still didn't really fully get it. Like I started to think, oh, the way to take care of my teachers, and I think the pandemic was really hard on us this way, is I'll cover their last hour to get to their kid's ball game. Like I can do that. I'll do that. I was always doing that. And that was good in the moment. Like those things were good in the moment, but it was really short in its value. Like it didn't translate long-term when it came to difficult things that we had to navigate. Maybe the academic achievement was weak in one area or the other. Or maybe our culture climate in our building wasn't so great. Those weren't deposits that you could always make withdrawals from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's valuable. It's important. We should do kind things for others. That service has a value. But thinking about how do you feel here? How empowered do you feel is a different vibe when you go to places. If you think in your head, you guys, just think of food places. Oftentimes Chick-fil-A comes to mind. Oftentimes Culver's comes to mind in the Midwest. Those are places where you're like, it just feels different here. I won't talk about the places it doesn't feel great.
Sure.
And yeah. So that just doesn't
happen. But we know them.
Yeah. But that doesn't happen from just the manager coming out and saying, hey, could I put this down? Could I take your tray and set it down? Like that alone wouldn't get them there. That alone wouldn't get them there. There has to be a feeling of, this is what this place is about. Like I'm actually valued here. You know, I share the statistics. I don't want to go off like on a tangent about Chick-fil-A, but it's not just Chick-fil-A. Starbucks would be another good example. Is I actually use this analogy when I talk to our teachers, and I work with teachers about feedback and the value of feedback and how effective it can be when it's timely and specific. If I had you rank the fast food chains in the United States by the amount of time that it takes to get through their drive-thru, the ones with the best hospitality often take the longest to get through the line. Our actual research shows us that, but we never rate them that way.
Yeah, you don't notice it.
Ever don't talk a ton of smack about Chick-fil-A or Starbucks, for example, because they're getting met really early by employees. Like they'll meet you before you even get way in line, and they're in parkas and coats and they're like, how can I help you? And of course, with Starbucks and everything, now you have apps and you can put it in. And remember your order? You want us to do what you did last time?
Yeah.
you know, those kinds of things. So you're getting feedback. You're getting an opportunity for hospitality super duper early from a human usually. And that's something, a learning we can take into our work in school. What's our first opportunity to just have continued opportunities for building hospitality experiences?
Reminds me of a book I read a long time ago. It's a short, quick read. I think it's called The Richest Man.
Cool.
And it's about a Walmart clerk. And he always had the longest line, and people were willing to wait in that long line to have that experience. Because what I'm hearing you say is really about an experience that we're providing.
Mm-hmm.
We get to control our actions and our words. It's not a program you buy. It's nothing like that. Because in the end, we are humans working together with other humans with to humans. Support the complexities of another human, the brain of another human in the students there. Every interaction is an experience.
Yeah. We're in the belonging business. That's what we're in.
We are in the belonging business. I love that.
T-shirt.
I think it is another one. That might be the quote of the day. I always look for a quote at every podcast. That might be.
That just might have got it right there. Well, I'll tell you what, it's amazing how much power can be in that simple shift of hospitality. I mean, just a little bit. You're not talking about amazing things. It's just the way you do business. And so then the people that are part of your business, your students, your parents, your staff members, they just know that's just the way it is. That's just the way that business is done for your school. I love that piece. Something we can control. We're going to step away here for a minute, listeners. We'll be right back. And then when we do, Jim is going to help us look at that mindset shift that is required to make this stick. So hang on, folks. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Dr. Lisa Hill, a longtime educator of nearly 40 years as a teacher, counselor, professor, and vice principal, and I've seen just about everything public schools can throw at you. And now I'm sharing my tales on my comedy podcast, Vice Principal Unofficed. It's where school leadership meets laugh-out-loud stories, from underwear-required parent-teacher conferences, yes, really, to staff lounge confessions and more you won't believe. I'm telling it all with humor and a whole lot of heart. I also tackle the serious stuff too, like what schools really need to change and those behind-the-scenes moments no one talks about. So if you're ready to laugh, learn, and maybe even cry a little, but mostly laugh, join me and my 90-year-old mom, my unofficial co-host, on Vice Principal Unofficed. New episodes drop bi-weekly on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix. Trust me, this is one detention you'll actually look forward to.
It's time for the shift. This is where we challenge the traditional top-down administration model. Now, Chad, the Forward Ed Forum is all about sharing work and shifting the professional forward through the collaboration. When we're talking about shifting from the boss to the servant leader, what is like the biggest mental hurdle in administration has to clear to make it's this jump? And remember, we were talking about the servant leader. It might not be like doing everything for everybody. Just tell me a little bit more about what's that administrator have to do with their shifting of thinking to get to that level?
Well, you can't do it alone. And so you got to come to solace with that. You're not going to be everything to everyone. And that kind of hero complex that you have, you got to figure out, you know, everybody's going to be a little bit different on building capacity within the organization. Okay. And there's different ways to do it. So servant leadership sometimes is tricky because it blocks that out. So I think the one thing you have to do is have a little emotional intelligence, reflect on yourself and say, listen, I could do a great job here for kids and families, and I'm going to. But I'm not going to be everything to everybody all the time. And I think sometimes we just launch into whatever it is that we're going to do with teams, academically, behaviorally, athletically. And we think we don't really just want to own and understand there will be perils along the way. You know, this sort of what you can predict, you can prevent. Not entirely.
Yeah.
What you can predict is there's going to be bumps along the road. And so, again, we talk about grade reform. Matt and I have spent a lot of time working with teams on that. And we talk a lot about, like, what are the barriers that you predict? What are going to happen? You alone will not solve those. Because if you could, you would have already have done those. So you have to think about, oh, how am I going to empower and create an opportunity for more hospitality? We've talked about this in the first part of this episode. And one is that you have to use your bandwidth as a leader to remove barriers so that other people can think about putting themselves in that space. So what are the barriers for your staff and what are the barriers for your students to be able to have the opportunity to feel hospitality? There's a lot of great equity work to be done there, you know, thinking about policies and procedures that are really working against you to be able to provide a hospitable environment. I know, Jim, you're in schools all the time, and I bet you know within like 10 feet in the door how this feels. It just has a feel from the person you might, the student who opens the door for you walking into the school. Those generally are just not random. There's a culture of hospitality that's come along the way, and that can be developed, that can be grown, both on the staff. There's all parallels in this work, is staff and students. So I think as a leader, you have to think about, how can I clear the deck for that to happen? Not entirely. I can't give you half of the prep periods all day long to think about how you're going to have more hospitality, but how can I be mindful of every opportunity that I interface with our staff? Do I create an opportunity for hospitality? Do you feel valued and welcome here? And that's important. Now, sometimes that just means you have a seat at the table so you don't end up on the menu. Like, I actually ask for your feedback. I'll give you a great example. A colleague of mine and I were working on trying to develop an MTSS schedule for tier two intervention during the day of a PK2 school. Loaded day, just like everywhere else. Like every minute, like they would fight and do a backflip just to have more science and social studies if they could. And here we are thinking about how to squeeze 22 minutes of win time or priority time or tiger time or whatever it is that it was. And we believed in it. We knew that that was the right thing to do. But we left one particular stakeholder completely out of the equation. We had a guiding coalition team. We had a district team. We read 8 books. We did everything that we could do. And then when it came time to adjust the schedule, and again, we were like a year in advance. We weren't even doing it in the moment, which some people do that, right? And I forgot about one of my hospitality principles. Where are we going to rob these 22 minutes from? Where are they going to come from? And who did we not consult? And you know who the number one person is that we didn't consult that we should have? The food service manager.
Yep.
At a PK2 school, those folks just love that interaction with the students. They value that time. They crave that time to create a sense of community and culture for those students. That's their opportunity to provide hospitality to the students. And what did I do? Shorten it by 6 minutes because it wasn't important. In fact, to be honest with you, there were teachers in the building. We should shorten it. They're throwing milk and they're doing all kinds of stuff. They're in there for more than 17 minutes. It's crazy. Because they were thinking about it from a management perspective, not a hospitality perspective. And so we really, and luckily I heard wind of that early on, and the principal was dynamic. She's fantastic. She went right to them and had a conversation. I'm like, we want you to know, we know you are trying to bust everything you can do to provide, you know, maybe the best meal of the day for these students and the time to socially interact and everything. It wasn't a zero sum for us, but that's how you felt. And so it really impacted them and their staff when they heard wind of this. And so luckily we had the opportunity to get out in front of that, clear the deck a little bit, figure out different ways in which we could accommodate, and then actually do some professional learning on MTSS for food service people. Like, what an empowering piece. So then they got all fired up about like, oh, so there's like another time in which is kind of stressful because some of the students need help and enrichment. I wonder if that's when we could do snack. And it actually created a better environment in the long run, but we almost missed the boat entirely.
So a question there, question for you on that. So you said a lot of things there that got my mind spinning there a little bit. Well, one of them was kind of an experience, and I wanted to know where it hit for you. I believe in people taking chance as a principal, people taking chances and risk and trying all these different things in a safe environment. I had a direct conversation with my instructional coach one day, and she said I had a culture of compliance, and I told her she was wrong. And then she gave me examples over and over again that I couldn't argue against. And as the mature principal, I got up out of my office mad and walked around the building a couple times, and then came back down and said, okay, what do we do? So that I got humbled first, and then it's like, okay, so how did you go from building a compliant culture, even though you think you were doing building capacity, to building a true capacity of kind of what you talked about at the end by working MTSS with the cafeteria staff and so forth. So where was that moment for you, or have you always been that person?
Nope, I haven't always been that person, but I'll tell you one thing. And this would be a good opportunity for you to take out your pen and your paper, because I think this hopefully is a nugget for you. One of the most important things you can do, Jim, one of the most important forms of service is clarity. One of the most important forms of leadership is clarity. And if you can just challenge yourself to say, it isn't that I think I'm being clear because I got these thoughts rolling around all the time. Makes sense to me. It's that people feel clarity. And can they name it back to me? You know, I didn't always think like that. I didn't know that. And I think obviously I got to give a lot of credit to the DeFores and all the work in the PLC process, thinking back to, but even it's more than that. It's more than Rick Stiggins' work about, you know, any target that stands still long enough for kids to see it, they'll hit it. That's true for adults too. Brene Brown, clarity is kind. Like it's all around us, but it's like, it's not that I think it's clear. It's that everybody that we interact with, from our parents to our community members, to our staff, our bus drivers, our folks that are working with students. It wasn't that they were opposed to helping students, which is exactly where we were coming from with MTSS. It was they had no clarity of the system. Yeah. It didn't make any sense because most of the students, and I love to talk about intergenerational differences within our organizations, but most of our staff come from a generation that more is better. So they're like, oh, you're just giving up more reading time. No, this is a lot more than that. This is a lot different than what you're thinking.
Yeah.
So they think minutes are minutes. And it's not. It's about the value of the time. And so you have to be able to provide space and clarity of like, let me tell you what that looks like. What questions do you have? And I think I mentioned that before, like making sure people are at the table is important. They may not make a decision at all, but they have an opportunity to ask questions, have clarity, which of course leads right to buy-in. And the same thing with kids. I think the absolute number one secret hack code to grading reform, for example, is make sure your students can do it.
Clear that they students know what you're trying to get them to learn.
They are the end user after all. I mean, we might as well.
Well, I talk with people, it's kind of like, okay, do you teach standards or is your job to get students to learn the standards? Two completely different things.
100%.
I mean, people can argue with me on that one. And then I also, we go back to that clear. I know that when you're working with principals, you'll hear, I got to have that tough conversation. Well, if you're clear, it's not a tough conversation. It's actually a clear conversation of what the expectations are. And like you were talking about, if we are really clearly articulating what we're expecting in the classrooms, there's no gotchas. It's going to, I got you. I think we talked about that the last session or the last podcast there.
I love that.
And really, when you're thinking about it, it's remembering that it's not what's the intention isn't what matters. It really is how it's received or perceived or whatever the case is. And that's what everything you said is about. Looking through the lens of the other people and you know, the cafeteria staff, the teachers, the students, the parents.
That is awesome.
That's what you're all over what you're saying.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, one opportunity you have, I mean, especially now, you know, it's been a rough road the last few years for public educators. And I don't even need to go there for why it might be, you know, it doesn't matter. But think about the hospitality you have as an organization when it comes to providing open doors to the great things you do. I know most schools that I go to, the doors physically are wide open from 4 to 10 at night, but they're not there to see the things we're doing most of the day. You get to see our gym. You get to see our performing arts center. But have you seen a teacher refer to a learning target on the board and unpack it with their students? Have you seen them take ownership of their learning on a proficiency scale and say, hey, mom, I can do this. I can do this, but I can't do that. I can identify evidence, but I'm not sure it supports my claim.
And if you haven't seen it, it's one of them. Most beautiful things I've ever seen in a classroom.
And that stuff's happening in our schools all the time. So when we talk about clarity, you got to have some hospitality. Say, hey, come and check this out. We'd love to show you. Mm-hmm. We want to show you. And of course, we've gotten better in recent years. I think we've gotten better in recent years around like instructional rounds and instructional coaching, teachers to teachers, which has its own challenges. But one of the things I love doing this year, because I really interface with a lot more career and technical education, we've got some wonderful programs at our school is, all the members of our CT advisory board that own businesses and participate and donate their time, I make sure they all get tours during the school day. I don't want them coming to our labs, our woodworking lab or a cabinet making lab or our aquaculture class, which is amazing, and not see kids interfacing with the learning. And so the teachers feel empowered because they're like, hey, look, there's our director showing us off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the kids are like, I better show them what I can do. And I always encourage, I'm like, feel free to ask them questions. Feel free to ask them questions about the learning. And I can tell you whether it was when I was with the Kiwanis Club and we would do, you know, book fundraisers and bring them in and present the check. At any level, most of the time people are like, it's amazing what you guys do here. And the reason why is because we're welcoming them in. We have policies and procedures for guests, visitors, all that kind of stuff. Sure. But with a purpose to say, wow, this feels really inviting to come learn here.
Yeah.
You know, a placard on the wall won't do that for you. You have to think about all the steps along the way. And to your point, Jim, like, are we asking the right questions? Hey, what did you like about that? I love the after action report. Like, after we did a visit, I might follow up with the teachers and say, hey, did that feel awkward? Or like, was that not okay? Should I come at the beginning? Should I come at the end? You want me to ask questions of students. They feel honored in the work. And they're like, I didn't think you would ask me about that. And I'm like, well, it's your classroom. I really appreciate you doing that. I just want to be able to honor some great work that we're doing
here.
You know, so thinking about the whole picture there, but you got to ask questions and get clarity so people know they feel valued in the work.
Mm-hmm. So you're over a few times here in this portion of the program, you've talked about an opportunity. Every opportunity is an opportunity to give them an experience, and you're defining what that experience is, because although I don't think you said it yet, but you said everything but this word, and that's being intentional. Everything you're doing is intentional, and the purpose has a clear why behind it. That's for sure. If you can make that shift and you change the entire DNA of your building, wow.
So true.
It doesn't happen overnight. And you talked about this a little bit. It's like, I think the flashy things fade. So that's just a Jim Wichman thing. Flashy fades. But when we're intentional and we can see the end and we're clear with what it is, it's empowering and it's powerful, where we move from building a compliant culture to building capacity so everybody's a part of that, including the student.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, great point.
Hey, we'll take one last break, and then Chad will lead us into our final segment on how to put this all into practice.
All right, so we have looked at what we can control and what we need to think or how we're going to shift that thinking. So now it's time for that lead segment. So Chad, for the administrator or teacher leader that's listening right now, I mean, how do they scale all of this you're talking about? How do we take this hospitality mindset and use it to lead our building so that it becomes that standard like you've talked about? Just from the minute people enter the front office into the classroom, how do we go about that? Or what's a few things that I can do to at least get headed down that path?
Yeah, there's a lot of things you could do. And I think the timing of this episode and the timing of leaders thinking about it in April is a perfect time. It's not an initiative. It doesn't require a webinar. You know, like, this is a perfect time to, and also give an opportunity to do some small group work and some professional learning to talk as a team. Everybody that works in your organization knows what it feels like to go to a hospitable organization. You should talk about what that feeling's like. You should name those things because everybody can participate. I mean, when's the last time you had your secretaries jump right into a professional learning workshop? When's the last time you've had your custodians do that? And you're going to want to be mindful about how you set it up and heterogeneous in the groupings and all that kind of stuff. And just say, you know, we're really excited about making this place someplace that people want to be. And we want to bring in elements of hospitality. Let's just jump right to it. Let's name some places. What did it feel like? How did they do that? And the leadership's responsibility is to make the connections. Like, I heard, you know, synthesize that work. I heard that you guys love the idea that a hospitable place is welcoming, you know, whatever it might be, whatever these themes are that they come with. They just start getting audits. Start doing a little bit of audit work with some small groups, some committees to say, what's the first place we might feel unwelcome here? Let's ask the students. Let's ask the staff. Let's make it anonymous. Doesn't matter. Data is data, right? So we got to own our data. Once we produce it, then we have to own it, good or bad. And I think that's a process you can do even without a PD day, right? Like, you could figure out ways. Maybe collaborative teams can do it. Talk to students. Maybe you start with students. And you can't always approach it from like a real leadership type style, because it'll feel like really odd to just be talking about hospitality. Talk about it in more general terms. We want to make sure everybody feels valued here, and this is a place of learning. That's the other thing, is I almost always tie it back to learning, not always facilities and all these flashy things in programs. I tie it back to learning. How do people know this is a place, a business for learning?
Yeah.
How do you feel that? I always used to love that my students would, this is so self-aggrandizing, but my students would always tell me, like, when I would ask for their feedback in before Google Forms, like I would literally like make a survey and I had them fill it out at the end of my government class. And when I would debrief with them from the data, it's like, hey, I want to lean more into this. And more often than not, I felt like they had great classes, but I felt like the students said, I could tell it meant a lot to you.
Mm.
I could tell it meant a lot to you. And the follow-up question is that, how? And I would love to do I didn't know about the five whys back then. I would have just started digging in further, but it was great for them to say, well, you were always organized. You always cared if we weren't meeting proficiency at any level. You always felt like everybody could do it no matter what their last name was, things like that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I kind of hung my head on that. And that was a little bit more about my personality probably at the time, but I think, geez, I could have scaled that to, you know, to other teams. So I think one way is that. The second thing is think about this, as I mentioned earlier, as a parallel structure. What's good for staff is good for students
mm-hmm.
in terms mm-hmm. of it's all the same. So if you're working and levering areas that are working with staff, think about how are we communicating that with students? There is not a single school I've ever worked with in grading and assessment that once they make the launch towards having more of their grade represent just the academic standards, that they have this big, ugly thing they have to deal with called, yeah, but how do we get them to do this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what about turning stuff in and deadlines and all that? Isn't that important? Yes, that's super important. That's absolutely incredibly important. But how could we utilize the framework that maybe has been successful in developing hospitality with anticipating what the barriers are about feeling welcome to teach the skills we expect and desire? And so you got to ask, you got to get feedback, so on and so forth. It does not equate to lowering the standards for people. This work. And I think that's important. As a leader, I talked about making sure people have a seat at the table so you can get feedback. Of course, that's true of students. Okay. And being very, very specific and clear about what it is that you desire that we want people to feel when they're in our school. I always, always make sure I'm very intentional with our newest students who have moved in because they'll be the most raw with you. They will compare. It's like, nobody explained this standards reference grading thing. And I'm like, nobody explained it. They enrolled you in classes, so on and so forth. Nobody explained it. Well, it's on our website. You see, there's an FAQ. And they're like, no one told us there was a website. Yeah. And that's not real hospitable. That's like going to a fancy restaurant and saying, no one told us you have to scan the menu with this QR code. No one told us the coupon came in the email from signing up for the list. So it was $25 more. Well, that's not very hospitable. How would I know that? So if you think about scalability, talking to your newest folks is a great way to do that in terms of getting just another lens of the beach ball. And here's my tip and trick for your school leaders that want to start this shift. You got to be present and you have to lean with your feet, not your phone. Get your feet in as many places as you can and be honest about what your intentions are. I always try to be honest ahead of time with teams. I told the two teams today, I'm going to spend as much time as I can with you this morning, but I got to be honest with you. I have two other commitments this afternoon. I'll stay as long as I can. I just want you to know that ahead of time. That took no time. That's like someone having to share the news in the restaurant. Sirloin steaks are our best thing, but I just want to be honest with you. We had a distribution problem and we might run out by 8:00.
Yep.
Up front. Yeah. I'm just being honest with you.
Clear. That's clear.
And so, you know, thinking about the intentionality of that is leading with my feet means I have to be in places where I'm showing people I care by being present. So that also means when I am there, I'm not typing emails. I usually force myself to do that by taking notes in a physical piece of paper. And when people talk, I listen. When people talk, I ask follow-up questions. Sometimes they're like, kind of random guy, why do you care about polynomials? And I want them to know that I care about it. Just like if you've ever seen in a great store, right? They're like, oh my gosh, you want to buy this shirt because it reminds you of your grandfather? Yeah, denim shirts are back in, blah, blah, whatever. They actually care. And you know what they'll do? They'll say, well, if you like that, we actually have another item coming in that's really similar, right? I have this grandiose theory about retail that, you know, during the last 30 years, all the back stock moved to the front and we did away with people like going to find sizes for you. I feel like the dare to be great business model is to reverse it right back and say, could I go into a store and say, I love this shirt. Do you have a medium? Now for me, it'd be a large, but the point of the matter is just what's the feeling of that? That feeling is, well, that person's only job right now is to go find out information I'm seeking about the product.
Yeah.
Just for me, not for everybody else. And I think that's interesting to see if that comes back around as being sort of popular because people value customer service. They'll pay more for it. But we don't want our students to have to pay more for it or our staff. Just what if we just showed up like that's who we are? And then, like I said, it's not always easy. And I make mistakes all the time. And that's one piece I would add here is part of having a hospitality mindset is being having humility and apologizing when you get it wrong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we need to model that for our kids all the time. And I make sure that if we don't do that with our adults, if I don't do that with our staff, like I'm notorious for not ending right on time. Like if I say this workshop's going to be over at 9:45 and we're rocking and rolling and I feel there's a ton of energy and I'm actually like seeking and feeling that they want more and it's 9:52, like there are people that are really mad. They're like, no, it said 9:45 on the thing you sent out in the district email. I'm like, it's like 6 minutes. What's the big deal? It's huge to them. So when I find that information out, I seek the individuals back out individually. I don't send a blanket email at all because there's a bunch of people who are like, not a problem. Yeah. I go right to find the person. I said, I want you to know I'm really sorry for going over the time. I said, I didn't honor you or your time by going over. And a lot of times, what do you think they say? Oh, it's not okay. It's just over the years, it's kind of one's ran in the other and we didn't get a break. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that. I'll be better next time. I appreciate that you pointed it out. Now, what's the likelihood that teacher is going to do that in their classroom?
You know, Jed, one of those things just tying directly to that. First of all, I speak DISC personality profile. If you don't know what that is, everything you're talking about is lined up with that. These people, it's important. This section, it's important here. It's here and here. Yep. One of the things that I worked with a teacher on is if I had a meeting with Tiffany at 1 o'clock, I leave my office for a 30-second walk at 12:58. I get out in the hallway and we all know what's going to happen. Jim, do you got a minute? Jim, do you got a minute? Well, my personality, my superpower does not know how to say no to that staff member because I don't want the staff member to feel bad. The teacher's up there. She'll be okay. I know where she's at. I'll get there. So I take care of this, but I go up to the top part and basically my actions are saying, even though we had a meeting at 1 o'clock set, you're not important enough for me to be on time. So as the principal, I met with Tiffany and I said, Tiffany, I seriously don't know how to address that dynamic. I mean, I don't know what to do. So Tiffany, a teacher and a different personality, and Jim, the principal, were two humans that sat down and honored both of us as humans first, title second. And we came up with three things to say to every staff member. And we came up with those and they're easy way to navigate that. And then in front of the staff, Tiffany and I stood up, said everything I just shared to you. And so if you come up to Jim and he says these three things, we're going to honor Tiffany's time or that teacher's time. And he's going to follow back up with you. And this is what we're meaning. No disrespect. And just by doing that, I'm the one that calmed down because I know that they are going to be, know that I'm not going to be disrespectful to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm also on time and respectful.
Great idea. Tiffany. Awesome stuff.
Great idea.
Awesome but it's stuff. Like, you got to lean in a little bit within that as well.
I want to share one more thing because I didn't get it in earlier. And I absolutely feel like it's been a difference maker when it comes to hospitality in terms of leadership. And that's praising other people to other people without them knowing it. I just think it's huge. And it's had, it creates, whether it makes it back to him or not, it makes no difference. What it makes a difference is if he's saying that about them, I wonder if he said that about me.
Yep.
Now, I used to do this. I learned this from my students. I didn't know this as a leader, but I, as a classroom teacher, I just kind of picked it up. I'm a real competitive person. I love sports and I just wasn't very good at them. But I love them. And I've been a head coach and all that kind of stuff. And so naturally, when I first started teaching social studies and I had the same section like six times a day, what do you think I did? Well, first period, 80% of them are at 3.0 or better, and I'm making bar charts and I'm doing all this kind of stuff. That only worked to a certain degree. You know what really worked? Hey, can I tell you guys about somebody that had an idea about the four causes of World War I from first period? Now, they gave me permission to say this. I just want you to know this. But they thought that it really wasn't militarism. It was more alliances. And that was John that said that. John, I never heard him say that, but I thought, I've never heard that before. I thought that was really interesting. You and I both know who John is. They know who John is. I think you catch my drift here. Now, I would never do that if I knew the student wasn't comfortable with it. And I oftentimes would just ask him, hey, I love that idea. Would it be okay if I share that with second hour?
Yep. Yeah.
And so I'm modeling that amount of hospitality and collaboration, number one. And so I do that exact same thing with staff. I probably did it 5 times today. And anytime I can, I'm doing it because I want to honor the work that people do in our organization to make this whole thing go. I do it when the people come through. When I talked about those guest tours that I do in our high school all the time, I stop them all the time. And I'm like, hey, this is Robert. He's responsible for making sure that this hallway is always super clean because this is our most highly trafficked because our passing periods, it has to come through here because that's going to get ready to go to our auditorium where all of our events are at night. And so this timing is really important. Robert's looking at me. He's like, why are you talking about me in front of these people? I don't know. And they're wondering, like, I thought I was on a tour about CTE. But I do that all the time because I want them to know that I notice. I notice what you do. And so I don't have kind of a big thing is writing notes to people. Like a lot of people like that. I love that. I don't have the best handwriting in the world. And I don't have time to do that. Like I can't do it all the time. I do it sometimes. And I think I know the folks that really resonates with them. But that public praise idea. And I know that if there's some people that are uncomfortable. I get it. But I talk about the work. I don't talk about their character or like their personality. Oh, they're such a nice person. Oh, no, I talk about their work. I'm like security and our secretary staff is dynamite. I mean, they know the face of 2,000 kids because we have certain times of day, we got to have doors open, right? I mean, obviously they're controlled most of the time. So like, I really brag them up because I know what's going to happen on our tours is our community members who don't come to the school during the day, because remember they come to games at night, doors are wide open. It's like a prison in here. I couldn't get in here. I just scanned my badge. And I get their license out. Their license didn't scan, you know, all those kinds of things. So I always, right after they go through that, I said, hey, this is this person's name. This is this person's name. They're the front lines of our school. They get to know everybody here. I really appreciate you going through it. Yeah. I know it's kind of cumbersome, but, you know, I try to just switch the narrative right away and make sure that they know their role. You know, that's a tough role for them, right? Think about how hospitality's changed on the front lines. They used to be able to not even have to buzz people into your school, right? Like they could just meet people wherever.
That's true. Crazy
so thinking about that. So often a tougher ask for them. That requires a little bit different level of training, so on and so forth. And, you know, those are just opportunities. There's a million ways I can do it. And I want to try to do that. I'm very conscientious about doing that. You know, when I very first started thinking more about being intentional around that work, I used to have these, Jim, you'll love this. I used to have these like super cheap poker chips that I got, like, I don't know, a wedding gift or something. They're plastic. They're not even like real ones or whatever.
Yeah.
And I had them forever. Like, and my wife's like, you need to throw these away. You don't play this game. And she was right. And I had them on my dresser or something. We moved and I don't know where we were at. And it's like, okay, I got to throw these away. I grabbed a bunch of them and I had an intention to have them as like fidgets for students who just needed a little bit of time in my office. I was assistant principal at the time. And I never ended up getting there because I'm walking the hall and I had an awesome conversation with this teacher. I'll never forget it. It's probably like 2014. And I'm playing with the poker chips in my pocket that I brought to school that day. And it just kind of hit me. It's like, what if I just took these every day, like 3 or 5 of these? And it just reminded me, I need to get all these from my right pocket to my left. To remind me, can I do this 5 times today? Can I talk positively about someone 5 times a day? Now, that was really easy for me to do because when I had games, I was there at like 7 a.m. till 10 p.m.
Yeah.
And so it'd be kind of a little bit of a challenge, right? If I had 2 left in my pocket on my right pocket and they weren't in my left, by the end of the day, I'm like, I'm at a basketball game. How can I do this? And it kind of became a fun game.
You probably were feeling unbalanced too.
Yeah,
if you weren't doing it, you weren't getting
it. Right. I won't with that, but you know, I'm kind of like George Costanza. I had the big wallet that was super thick.
Right.
Had me off balance. The keys, you know, you always have these big chunk of keys.
You just hang off to the other side.
Chips, you got that it. Was nothing compared to that. But, you know, it was just kind of a fun strategy. That's I didn't have amazing. To do that after a while. I didn't need that tactile thing, but it was awesome how it kind of got me in a rhythm of that. And then you just do it a lot more than 5 times a day. And it really translates into students. It actually became a kind of a, when I was an assistant middle school principal of discipline, if one of the methodologies I would do, if someone came down and they were all in a huff or whatever, and I'm, how are you going to be hospitable to someone that just broke the rules or was disrespectful or whatever? sometimes what I would just do is start talking about the secretary right away. I'm like, hey, man, can you believe all the line of people that just brought in all the people that forgot their jerseys tonight for the game? That's kind of annoying. She has to call those people down. Maybe they should not get to play in the game tonight. And they're kind of like reorienting, like, well, I guess that is kind of annoying that she has to call these people down and pick up their jerseys or whatever. But all those little incidences, like you talk about, Jim, give you the opportunity to talk positively about other people in the organization. Obviously, you could do it from kids, too. It's pretty easy. And it's always genuine. You never want to, like, push the envelope saying, well, I felt like I haven't said anything to that person for a while. No. Just like in the classroom. I'm not going to tell you you've got a standard when you don't have a standard. You know, so I think those are just some things. It's probably more than what you were asking for, but I'm really passionate about the work. It's not perfect. I don't know everything.
I love it.
And I'm sure a bunch of people already do all these things too. So, but it's just kind of a neat lens on leadership that, you know, in April, you know, these are things you could do.
Well, I love it. I'll tell you what, there's a lot there, but again, I think any little tidbit helps. And I think that's really kind of what we're shooting for. So this has just been great. This has been awesome. We're going to take our last commercial break. When we get back, Jim, we're going to wrap this up and talk about what we got coming up in May and say goodbye to Dr. Chad Lang and a big thank you for being on the show today here. So hang on, listeners. Be right back right after this.
For students wondering what comes next and how to get there, there's Next Step Scholar, a platform that helps learners explore careers, build direction, and take meaningful steps toward their future. Not overwhelming, just clearer paths forward. Next Step Scholar. Every future starts with a next step.
This segment is sponsored by Grundmeier Leader Services. Since 2013, GLS has been a trusted partner for school districts across the Midwest, specializing in executive recruitment and leadership support. They believe that great schools start with great leaders, and they are here to help you find the perfect fit for your district. Transform your school's future with the right leader. Visit GrundmeierLeadersearch.com to learn more. Grundmeier Leader Services, transforming education one leader at a time.
School leadership is demanding, and your time is finite. You don't need vague jargon. You need practical strategies that work. Join host Adam Bush every Wednesday morning for your morning boost on the Forward Ed Network. In just a few minutes, you'll get high-impact professional development, moving you from a reactive fixer to a capacity-building coach. Subscribe to your morning boost today.
This has been such a refreshing conversation this April. I got to tell you, though, you definitely are speaking my language. Look at me. I got to stay calm here a little bit, which is a good thing, I think. But Adam, before we wrap up our time with Chad here, would you kind of like do a little quick recap for us, some of the main points of the control and then the shift and the lead for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So in control, Dr. Lang talked about having that hospitality mindset. So we got to know that purpose and had a great line. We are in the belonging business. Anytime we're in education, we got to remember that part of it. I thought that was really awesome. Shift, we talked about the true meaning of a servant leader. And that's not about doing it all. It's really about building capacity and all, because we're all part of that. Every single person in that building is part of that belonging business that we're talking. And then lead, talked about involving all from the start. Let people know that they're part of this. What's good for staff is good for students. And don't forget, it is a place of learning. And I'm going to say, we kind of glossed over. We let him keep going, Jim. We should have interrupted him real quickly because he had another awesome line there, another one-liner. Lead with your feet, not your phone. Lead with your feet, not your phone. I thought that was...
That is amazing. It's just so simple. And Adam, I'm going to... I know Chad's right here talking with this, but I'm going to say it to you. None of this costs money.
Nothing.
It's all free.
Yeah.
There's no program out there. It's just how you treat people, seeing them as a human first, not just some, but all. And I think that's really powerful. Amazing. Chad, I appreciate everything you've done here. Obviously, you're speaking my language, man. I really do appreciate it. Well, before we let you go, we want to make sure that if listeners have one, you know, like reach out to you, ask some questions. I know you'll take them. You always do. In fact, I think it gives you energy when you do that. We've mentioned the Forward Ed Network and your your time with your podcast with Mr. Bowtie, My Terms. But what's another way people can get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'd probably LinkedIn. LinkedIn's the best way. You know, I think it's a great way to reach out and make a professional connection there. I'm not really on any of the other social platforms anymore. I guess besides sports on X, I'd love to follow all the favorite teams there and keep up on the news. I guess I have a 14-year-old son who can help me with that, you know, so I can expedite all the information on trades and seeds and rankings and all that business. So that's kind of fun to be able to connect with him on that, let him take the lead there. It's, LinkedIn's the best way. You can check out a little bit more about me and what we do at Recalibrate Ed Services at recalibrateedservices.com. And some great resources, other, you know, episodes, podcasts I've been on with Adam, others as well, and lots of different topics and maybe some reference points, a few blog posts, and of course, just ways to reach out to me in general by email.
I want to buy a book that was authored by Dr. Chad Lang. Where would go?
Yeah, Bloomsbury is our publisher, but you can go to Amazon, of course. A Parent's Guide to Great Area Reporting, being clear about what matters. You can find a lot of the sentiments and themes I talked about today. It's a whole nother podcast, a whole nother episode about how your grading assessment is form of communication, not notification, and how that fits into being a hospitable person is, you know, communication is two-way. And you're taking professional data and trying to translate it for lots of different stakeholders. I think it's important to know that there's an art and craft to that, and validity is important as well. And so we wrote that book with parents in mind, as well as school leaders and educators, to facilitate that form of communication that oftentimes comes out in a grade. So we're really, really proud of that work. We're so glad to have the opportunity to always chat with folks about it. We're not the one and only experts. There's no doubt about it. We feel like any contribution we can make to our colleagues out there, we're going to do it. And of course, parents, it was really, really good for us. Matt and I are both parents of teenagers and kiddos. We live it. You know, we're practitioners, authors, researchers, and parents too. So, right, like I feel like it crosses enough of the Venn diagram that we thought we could pull together and synthesize our passion for the work. And you mentioned right here on Forward Ed, a grading miniseries called The Grading Exchange, 20 Years in the Trenches, 4 different episodes for school leaders to dive into, kind of learn from some of our trials and tribulations. And also, we just shout out a lot of great practices that we've observed in schools across the United States too. So, you know, when you're in the school leadership work, I really love this idea of alignment and coherence. So like none of these things are disparate, right? Having a hospitality mindset is not in a separate silo from teaching and learning. It's not in a separate silo from extracurricular activities and well-being. It's all part of your picture of a coherent experience.
Right.
One of the best ways, like I think I mentioned earlier, like clarity is a great form of service to your students and your staff.
Yeah.
And making sure that those systems are working together in a coherent way. Because as you alluded to right off at the beginning, Jim, a kid's high school experience is like Frogger, if people remember that game. And we want it to feel like, yeah, it's a different experience throughout the day. And we actually really relish that diversity of experience, but the uniformity and the feel, right? Our brand is very clear about what it's like to go to school year and set you up to be super successful beyond our doors.
Well, Chad, I got to tell you that your knowledge was great. Don't get me wrong. But your energy and passion about that knowledge was probably just a little bit more than we thought we could even get out of you this time of the year and this time of the evening that we're working with here. So I got to tell you, thank you. And this won't be our last opportunity to work together. That's for sure. There's too much energy flying around. And if I'm ever in the area, I'm going to be popping by and we're going to be walking through the schools. And I want to, you're right. I know how to feel it. And I can read schools pretty well, read classrooms, read where the undercurrents are. And I love that you're owning the story and you're telling people the story too. It's about being clear. Hey, listeners, we're going to have all those links that Chad talked about in our notes to our listeners. Make sure you're going out and controlling what you can, shift your thinking, and lead your schools. Before I go, though, I got to tell you, next month is going to be something a little different twist. We've got the Unorthodox Principal. If you want to just check that out, go check out Lee on social media. Mostly I see her on Facebook and Instagram. And Chad, you're going to be, between you, me, Townsley, and Adam, I mean, there would be too much overstimulation for everybody here. So this is, I'm looking forward to it, listeners, and make sure you check us out. Yeah. So, hey, just want to make sure everybody knows that no matter what, under any circumstance, you're never alone and you matter. We'll see you next month on Control Shift Lead.
Thanks for hanging out with us today on Control Shift Lead. If you enjoyed the show, There's plenty more to discover in the show notes, including ways to connect with Jim and Adam, or even launch your own educational podcast. While you're there, take a look at the other amazing shows on the Forward Ed Network. They're doing incredible work sharing the stories of educators everywhere. We'll see you next month. Now, go out and control, shift, and lead your school.